Hey everyone, you're listening to the Embrace the Messy podcast with Shannon Schinkel. I'm a high school educator, challenge seeker, lifelong learner, and embracer of all things messy. I find inspiration from individuals who are passionate about learning and embracing change. Join me as I share my experiences and interview people who will inspire you to embrace the messy too. Let's go. Robert John Meehan once said, "Teachers' most valuable resource is each other. Without collaboration, our growth is limited to our own perspectives." Meehan, a renowned American author, educator, and poet, has inspired countless individuals worldwide, including me. This quote brings to mind a book I'm currently reading. It's called Indivisible: How to Forge Our Differences into a Strong Future. It's by Denise Hamilton. It's fabulous. I highly recommend it. In it, Hamilton suggests that, and I'm paraphrasing here, acknowledging and accepting others should not be hindered by misunderstandings or fears of differences. She emphasizes that acknowledgement and acceptance should occur regardless of our understanding of those differences. It's like saying, "I may struggle to accept you because of your race, sexuality, religion, or politics, but I am willing to understand and accept if you explain it to me." It's bogus. People shouldn't be judged for who they are. We should love one another without conditions. No one should be put on trial. Indigenous people shouldn't have to justify themselves to their non-Indigenous neighbors. Similarly, a transgender person shouldn't need to explain themselves to their cisgender coworkers. Differences in political beliefs, religious affiliations, or any other aspect of identity should not hinder acceptance. Reflecting on King Arthur's words in the movie First Knight, "We should embrace people wholly, not in fragments. As Arthur told Lancelot, I take the good with the bad. I can't love people in slices." Returning to Meehan's quote, can we show our students that we're willing to argue and collaborate in a way that transcends biases? Because I believe that when people come together, magical connections occur. I have never sat down with educators and not had something magical. But sometimes it's difficult just to get people to sit at the table. We shouldn't underestimate the potential for progress due to perceived barriers. Yes, differences exist, but they shouldn't deter collaboration. Let me make one thing really clear. I won't compromise my beliefs to appease others at the table. They must accept me entirely, without judgment. They must respond and listen authentically, fostering genuine dialogue. By the same token, others should never have to compromise their beliefs to appease me at the table. I will accept them entirely, without judgment. I must respond and listen to them authentically, fostering genuine dialogue. It goes both ways. As Mr. Rogers famously said, "There's no person in the whole world like you, and I like you just the way you are." So I want to thank you, all my listeners, for accepting me for who I am, because I believe that you reaching out to listen to this podcast is you accepting me for who I am. Thank you for being part of my community.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Brian Carpenter is a teacher in Abbotsford, British Columbia, Canada. He teaches media design, math, and chemistry. In our conversation, Brian and I talk about Fresh Air at 5, his fabulous podcast, which is about his reflections as he listens to podcasts on his morning walks and then reflects on those podcasts that he listens to. It's such a novel podcast. And it's a way that he can connect with the podcast host and share his reflections with you in the world. We get into all of that. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Brian Carpenter. Welcome to the Embrace the Messy podcast.
Thanks for having me, Shannon. Excited and honored to be a guest on your podcast.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. Before we begin, like, you and I know each other via the social media. Like, we've interacted a little bit on the socials. We don't know each other really well, but I have to say, before we kind of dig in to your podcast and your journey and teaching and learning, that I really appreciate the impact you've already had in helping me out with my podcast. Like, you're one of the first people to kind of, you know, jump on it and use it to talk about it on your own podcast. And I know we kind of know each other through a few, you know, mutual friends like Olivia Chan and, you know, Tim Cavey and Tom Schimmer. And we kind of float in the same circles. But, you know, I really appreciate that you've been listening to my podcast, and it helped amplify my voice. So I just want to say thank you so much for doing that and supporting mine.
You're very welcome. It's a privilege that I get to listen to free learning, you know, and if I'm dead serious, you know, because like, where can we get the kind of learning that we can do, that we can share with others very easily, the things that we're learning from, you know, our connections with other people?
It is free pro D.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can do it like anywhere. Like, you can be walking your dog and loading the dishwasher and,
that's right,
you know, cleaning up cat poop and on a walk, right? Listening to podcasts, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So I'm fascinated by origin stories. And I guess I want to know what your story is, like, you know, where you're from, a little bit about, you know, young Brian and your journey and getting into education and your role now.
All right. Well, young Brian grew up in Calgary, Alberta, and with my mom and dad and sister. We lived in a small community in Calgary, like in one of the neighborhoods. I went to high school. School was not what school is now. It was far from the community mindset that it is now. It was about getting through, getting done. And, you know, high school was a non-event for me. You know, I lived through my weeks of high school so that I could go to youth group at church on Friday night. And that's what kept me going every week. You know, every day I was a good student. I didn't have any issues with academics other than English. Hated English, loathed English. I did. And, you know, social studies was right up there because it was some, you know, humanities wasn't my thing, right? I prided myself in grade 11 that I dropped out of English the first day of grade 11. And then the next day I crawled back to class because I got my butt kicked and by my parents, and I was back in class, and my English teacher, he had compassion on me and recommended me for a longer year of English in grade 12. I got to take two semesters in grade 12 with the best English teacher I've ever had. And he changed my mind about reading and about learning and things like that. So I had an impactful teacher in you know, number through high school. Mr. Rollins in grade 12 probably was my most impactful, and it was English, right? My least favorite subject, but it was at 8 o'clock every morning. And there were 12 of us, and we were a special group of students, and he worked really hard with us and changed our mind about learning. So that was that. I went to college for a year after that, and I was planning on becoming a missionary, you know, and heading out into the field and doing all those things. And the humanities at college was just not my thing, the writing and all those things. And so one day I called my dad and said, you know what, I'm not doing this after this year. I'm going to go to university, and when I get, I'm done, you know, in a few years, and become a scientist. And I did, and got into being a scientist, right? Finished my bachelor's of science in, I think it was 1994. And then after that, no, 94, 97. Yeah, it was no, about 97, 1997. Okay. And then I started my master's of science. And while I was doing my master's, we were encouraged to be lab instructors and working with, you know, like a course, second year organic. And we needed, like, I don't know, there was 18 of us lab instructors, and I had two sections that I had to cover. I discovered that I like working with students. I really found that that was a curiosity and like gave me something to do besides the research I was doing in my lab for my master's project, and discovered that. But at the end of my master's, I had to pay for my master's. So I got a job in industry out here that moved me from Calgary to out here to Abbotsford. I worked at a small pharmaceutical company in Langley, and we were a research pharmaceutical company. So, I got to practice my science in research every day, and our company was supportive of Science World and said, if you guys want to go and be volunteers with Science World for science and innovators in the schools, to go out and talk about science and what you do, that we will pay you for, your days of volunteering. We'll provide all the equipment and anything that you need. And so my buddy and I, we took our science show on the road, and I went out to schools and got to work with some teachers. And this is even before I was even thinking about education, right? Like I was just volunteering, and I really enjoyed working with other teachers and just telling them our story about, the things that you can actually do as a scientist. So fast forward to 19, no, to 2006, and we had a hostile board takeover at my company because we needed more money, and there was a big long story about that. And that precipitated us getting sold, and I got laid off. My wife was like, "Do whatever you want to do." And I'm like, I think maybe being a teacher might be a cool thing." So, one cold October night, I walked across my yard into my neighbor's yard and knocked on his door. And he was a principal of a school, and his wife was an educator as well. And I said, "Why do you guys do what you do?" So they sat me down. An hour later, they're like, "Brian, I think you might like to do what we do." And I went to Simon Fraser University, went to the information session, started PDP, and one thing leads to another. And here I am 15 years later.
I love this idea of one's personal journey, right? You come to these different forks in the road, you make
Yeah.
these different decisions, and then sometimes things kind of step right into your path, right?
Yes.
They
Yeah.
deter you from going one way, and then you have to backtrack, and then you take another fork.
Yep.
B Brian, your journey into teaching, never mind
Yeah.
teaching, could be a book. Like
Yeah.
it could be a book. Like it is so fascinating. I hear, the impact of, spirituality and how that helped develop you as a person. I hear that when I hear from so many students in post-secondary, especially in the humanities, where they literally feel like whoever is their teacher, they're meant to just absorb another person's opinion and regurgitate it back to them. And it makes it really hard, right? It
Yep,
makes it really hard to, you want to instill in them that, okay, you get the degree, you have to kind of do what you have to do to get your degree, and then you'll be able to think for yourself, right? And it makes me think about the things that we are going to do in our own classrooms and getting kids to actually, critically think and
yeah.
act, not being afraid that, we're not in this business to instill in others our mindset and how we feel about things, except for perhaps our passion for our
Right.
courses, right? That's a huge change, right? So that I can see how it can deter someone like you. I can see how it can deter other students. And like I said, you've got your personal journey. So tell me, what was that like? Because how old were you when you actually went into the teacher ed program?
I was 36 years old.
And did you already have kids?
So
Yeah, you
my
already.
master's of science was hard because it
Yeah.
was academically demanding, and I had to write a book. I had to write a thesis, like
Yeah,
150 pages of scientific academic research into this thing, which wasn't easy to do. But I wasn't married at the time, and when I got into teaching and went to teacher school, I lost my job, so I wasn't getting paid at all, and I was paying to go to school. We owned a house, cars. We had two kids at the time, and a third one was on its way,
that's
and
scary.
so it really, really was. So, the gravity of teacher school was just, it was a lot. I was the oldest one in our cohort, And there was a number of young whippersnappers that, they were 22 years old, had finished their bachelor's, and they're like, "Brian, how do you do this?" And I'm like, "Do what?" And they're like, "Well, this whole PDP thing, because like I'm trying to write lesson plans and I just find it overwhelming, and you're doing that and you're a dad and husband." And I'm like, "Well, you just gotta get at it and just do it, because it's that important, right?" And so the day that my sponsor teachers at the high school slid my final report across the desk to me that they signed was the day that like the weight was lifted. Like I broke down and cried, because it was just so heavy that I had accomplished this thing, and that I think put me in a good position as a mature adult into a classroom that I could help understand where students are coming from way different than if you were young, right? If you didn't have that life experience and all those things that I had had, it would, it'd be, I don't know, I wouldn't maybe be as compassionate as a teacher,
This resonates because my husband went back to school and he was 30. He had been I'd already I see I'm in different ballpark. My dad was an elementary school teacher and I knew I was going to be a teacher. I was going to do something in English social studies. I was thinking about things like broadcasting very early on when I started my degree. I knew I was going to go into teaching. The drama thing kind of came later on, but that's, I've talked about it that in other podcast episodes. And so I was in the thick of it. We'd already had Alexander, and that was in 2000. And my husband went back to school, and I think that was like 2003. And he just, and so, like, I hear you and how hard it is when you got bills to play, pay and you've got, got mortgage and vehicles, and there's hardly anything coming in. Never mind that back in the day, you didn't get that long of a maternity leave in order to get paid. I was back to work when my son was only 5 months old. And even then, and then I was pregnant with my daughter while my husband, when my husband graduated from a diploma program at our local college. And well, then, you've got debt up the wazoo, right? I wanted desperately to go back to take the whole year off with her, right? And I ended up having to go back after she was like 8, 9 months old. So, and it's so hard. I love this idea too that because you were a mature student and you were on this journey, I guess my next question is, do you share that your story with students in your classes? Like, do they hear you talk about what your journey was like?
A little bit, like I don't, overtly go, "Okay, today's Carpenter Storytelling Day, and I'm going to tell you my life." No, I don't do that. But it comes up that, like I was a scientist. I worked in research. I problem solve, and I use the skills that I learned as a scientist every day as I'm teaching technology and media. And like we. I teach them about critical thinking because it's so very important, right? How can we do research, and how can we, problem solve a problem and work out something that we don't necessarily easily understand, but figure it out and work hard at it. So.
So I want to pivot just a little bit here in terms of your podcast, Fresh Air at Five. And well, hey, I love this. It's so original. Like, I don't think I've seen another podcast where your primary goal is to talk about other podcasts. Right. But I also, right. It's right. It's novel. It's novel. It's interesting, but it's like these little nuggets. But I like how, you write, it's my regular attempt to exercise by walking about my neighborhood, to take in podcast content or an audiobook and then reflect in an unedited video. So, okay, what led you to this concept, Brian?
All right. Well, I started exercising 1 year, going to the gym, paying a membership, and I was like, I got to be at the gym at 5 a.m. so that it doesn't impact my family. I can get my workout in, be home before my wife and kids get up, and I can be a dad, and it doesn't take away from family time. So there was that. But then if I didn't make it by 5 and it was 5 after 5, it was like, okay, it throws off my balance in the morning and all these things that I'm like, you know what? I should just go outside and walk. Like, I got running shoes. I got walking shoes. I got my neighborhood. I live in a hilly neighborhood. I can go and put on some kilometers every day. And I started doing that. And instead of listening to music, I started listening to some podcasts. I was listening to This Week in Google and other things like that. And then it was the year that Tim Cavey invited me to be on his podcast that really spurred me on to listening to other educational podcasts. And I didn't really know what the edu Twitter landscape looked like until I actually started digging in and started following people, and then followed more people, and then went, hey, there's all these educational podcasts that I could listen to. And I started doing that. And I'm like, okay, what do I do with this information that I'm taking in? It goes in my head, and what do I do with that? You know, and for me, reflection's a big part of why I do what I do, right? So what am I going to do with that? I'm going to connect with the podcaster and tag them on Twitter. This is back when it was called Twitter. I still call it Twitter, actually.
I know.
But yeah,
The
but
social media platform formerly known as
known
Twitter.
as Twitter. Exactly. Thank you. And so I would tag the podcast host because they were on Twitter and go, hey, I really like this part. And in 280 characters, you can only say so much. So I figured out that I could put a picture on the side with more words. And so I put a graphic and started to cheat the system a little bit and get, you know, 400 characters instead of 280. And so I would put a graphic. And then one day I was listening to a podcast, another podcast, and Jeff Gargis from Teach Better, he was on, and he said, you know what? I heard that you can, like, I'm gonna put a selfie video. You can actually put videos on Twitter. And I'm like, well, what's that mean? And I started looking at that, and then I found out that my video limit was 200 and, you know, 2 minutes and 20 seconds per video. And I'm like, huh, so I can do that. Now I can say a whole lot more words in 220 seconds than I can type in 280 characters. And I get my 280 characters. So I'm like trying to economize my ability to reflect and connect with podcasters. So I'm doing this for probably about a year. And then Chris Nessie from the House of Ed Tech, one year at Christmas time on the EdTech Smackdown, which is coming up the end of December this year. And if you don't listen to House of EdTech, you should. So that's a recommendation. And he on the on his podcast called me out and said, Brian Carpenter, you should have a podcast. And I'm like, listening as I'm walking in the morning, listening to this. So it's kind of meta, you know? I listen to myself talk about some EdTech. And then he's like, and you need to start a podcast. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I have no idea how to do that. And so I reached out on direct message on Twitter and said, Chris, how do you do that? He goes, let's meet on Zoom. So we met on Zoom. This is during COVID. And so, you know, I wasn't, this is what we started doing is we started talking on Zoom like we are right now. And very easily, we're like, we sat down and I said, well, I have some ideas about podcasts. He goes, you're already doing it. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you're walking in the morning. You've got your video. What if you took all those videos in the morning and stuck them together into a podcast episode from like Monday to Friday with all the audio pieces? Get rid of the video and put an intro and outro, and boom, you got your podcast. I'm like, who's going to listen to that? He goes, someone's going to listen to it, and it will, it's novel. Not anybody else that I know is ever doing this. And so that got me started. And it was like, I think it was January of 2021 that he sat with me while I pressed publish and you know, pressed go on episode number one. That was then. And now, as of when we're recording this now, in you know, we are in early December. I'm at a episode 148. You know, and I've been doing this almost every week. There's a few times where I miss, you know, my week because of health or, you know, exhaustion or other things. But, you know, it helps me to stay consistent with one, getting exercise, two, learning, and three, connecting with podcasters such as yourself and growing my professional learning network.
No, and I love it. Well, and I think, you know, we're in this culture where everyone is busy, we're looking for ways in which we can save time. I think 90% of the educational books that I read or listen to because I'm a big Audible listener, comes from podcasts. I'll listen to a podcast.
Right.
They'll reference a book. I'm listening to it. So it's a time saver. It's like, I'm going to listen to this 45-minute podcast or an hour-long podcast, get an idea if I think I'm going to like the book, and then I want to buy the book. So yours kind of works in the same way, right?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
I'm going to hear about these little nuggets of wisdom about these other podcasts. And it's like, oh, I think I'll go check out the whole episode of the podcast. It'll be really interesting in 2024 when you walk and talk about yourself, when you hear yourself on this podcast, Brian. I think that'll be great. So now sometimes the fresh air in which you record your podcast is not exclusively on walks in your neighborhood, right? But, and sometimes you're also on other adventures. Like, how do you decide what podcasts to listen to, right? Because there are so many.
Yeah.
There are so many. Like, I'm finding myself, like, I'm having to kind of weed out what I like. And then I'll hear about another one. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to start listening to that one, right? How do you decide?
Right. Well, how do I decide? Well, Apple Podcast Player on my iPhone helps me decide, because there's an algorithm that runs from things that I listen to, and up next is probably what I'm going to listen to tomorrow morning.
Okay.
You know, and so as I listen to your podcast and I listen to Tom Schimmer and, you know, Teachers on Fire and different podcasts, the more you listen to these things, the more they float to the top and stay in front of your face, right? So I did talk about this on my podcast one day that, you know, like, the algorithm gets in the way of staying connected with people that you were connected with a year ago, because you don't listen to them as much anymore because they're not at the front. So you got to go back in your library and go, who am I following? What am I listening to? You know, what have I listened to? And I should probably go back and connect with some of those people. You know, because I had community with them a year ago. Just because they're not at the top of my podcast player list doesn't mean that I shouldn't still have community with them. You know, check in on them, see how they're doing. It's actually that simple, Shannon. It's not super complicated of what I'm listening to. Now that I'm listening to your podcast, I actually go looking each week to see, you know, who you've got in your podcast. And there may be the occasional week that I don't listen. But, you know, when I have a hashtag new to me podcast, I try to listen for a while and connect with the podcasters that way. So,
oh, I think that's great. Do you ever use like the social media platforms also? Do you ever find any podcasts through like the different socials or anything like that?
Sometimes, you know, on Twitter, I follow people and they might post, you know, about a podcast that they've recorded. And I'm like, oh, I should go listen to that one. And I do. Or when I'm listening to a podcast and a guest is talking about, oh, and I've got a podcast, I will. I'll search it up on my app, and I will probably tomorrow, the next day, listen to that podcast and go, hey, a shout out to someone else that I'm listening to now, new to me podcast, and just keep providing a way to amplify podcasters' voices. Because, you know, if someone doesn't do it, it's hard to do, you know, unless you're part of a network that promotes and has you on their front page or their website or whatever that people are looking at, it's not going to happen. Right. And so I'm actually part of the educational podcast network that Chris Nessie started. And I am thankful that I'm part of that network. It allows me to connect with other podcasters. We advertise each other's podcasts at the beginning of each of our podcast episodes, and just allows us to amplify each other's voices. So
I think that's great. I love that idea of community. I also love that you're vulnerable in your podcast. So here's the thing, like, you do talk about other podcasts, but you also talk about life as a teacher.
Right.
And how hard it is, and sometimes how exciting it is, you know, like I'll hear you as you're walking, and I can hear the kind of the bit of stress in your voice some weeks, right? It's been a week. You know, I had a hard time getting up this morning, but I knew I had to get out there, and, you know, had report cards, and I had this and I had that, you know. Was that an important piece, or did that just kind of happen organically? Like,
Friend of mine, when I started recording, started listening, and she's like, Brian, you just talk about the stuff, but you don't connect it to you. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, part of that is connecting it to what I'm experiencing, things that I'm experiencing. Like yourself, when you put this podcast out, have already put a story or an anecdote at the front that's connected to what you've gone through that connects to the content that we're in, right? And so it's about us showing our authenticity as people that are going through things. And it allows me to have a platform to just share what's actually going on in my days, right? You know, what am I struggling? Why is it hard to get up this morning? You know, and the fact that, you know, people don't have to feel bad that if you start something like a New Year's resolution, that if you miss a day, that you don't have to just quit it and say, well, that's that, right? You know, being honest with yourself, because, you know, it's hard enough. And if we, you know, are always just, well, I didn't get up 3 days this week, that's the way it is, that'll stretch into a 2 week podcast for me episode, you know, because I only have 2 days of content. So then I got to stick something else on the other end of it, just to make it so that when you, Shannon, are listening, there's more than 2 days of like 6 minute podcast, right? It could be 2 6 minutes, but that's not what I said I was going to do. I was going to provide, you know, a small assortment of various podcasts for you to be able to take in and to be able to go and listen to if you want to.
But I think it's this connection building, right? And I know that on the days that I'm feeling the struggle, right? You know, report card time, especially, you know, this year in BC, a new reporting order, something's going on. I feel this sense of warmth and connection from you when I hear that you're going through the same things. I think we're all just here walking each other's home, right? We're all just here kind of supporting each other. And I think, you know, hearing that someone else is also going through something, even though, you know, it might only be 30 seconds of your podcast, is like, oh yeah, I feel you, Brian. I feel you. I'm doing that, right? And I think that's the empathy. It's the connection building. And I think, again, you know, I started this podcast, you know, I know similar to you, I had to kind of research how to do it before I even started it. And, you know, you referenced how I have the opening where I share a little story. You know, I love this idea of using it to show my gratitude towards people, even someone from, say, a long time ago, some kind of story that I can share, something I've had in the back, you know, because all I've ever done is really blog about assessment and all of, and or inquiry-based learning and that kind of thing. And it's like, let's try to work on being more, you know, like that storyteller, right? Like that kind of thing. So I really, really, really appreciate that. I can see that you and I are very much alike in that we're both reflective educators, right? So when you, I'm curious to know, when we kind of think about teaching and learning, and you know, if when we're inundated with some kind of a new reform, like, you know, like the new reporting order, some kind of assessment, you know, stuff, which I know is something that you're interested in, you've chatted about a little bit on Fresh Air at Five. What type of teacher are you? Like, what type of learner are you? Are you the type that when somebody comes up with something new, or we're having to make a change in our practice, there's some kind of reform, are you the type to be like, okay, I'll do it if I have to, or okay, I'll do it and I'll do it now? Or are you I'm going to do it now, and I'm also going to be a leader on that front?
Well, I would say that I am not at the very, very, very front of that. Okay. I appreciate those that go and pioneer and actually blaze the trail and cut that through the forest so that the rest of us can follow. I'm close on the heels of that. And I am, you know, I am not one to say I'm going to do it only when someone tells me I have to, right? Like, you know, because at that point, it's everybody's doing it that, and the impact that I can have and share in my novel learning with others isn't there, I don't think, you know. And for me to be able to say that, yeah, this is really hard to do, but it's worth doing is important for me, right? In order for me to model adaptability to my students, I have to stay in that I'm going to try mindset. right? You know, I ask my students to do things that are crazy all the time, you know. But if they don't see that I'm willing to try and do that, then I lose my credibility, and why would they try? You
Right.
know?
You're embracing the messy, Brian.
Absolutely, exactly. And
Right.
it's not easy, right? And I tell my students, I say, learning in my classroom, like I teach media design, is with project-based learning, and the projects that we're taking on are our school newsletter, right? So I've taken that from the office, and I teach them how to do desktop publishing in like PowerPoint. You know, like we're not using InDesign or other high-end desktop publishing things. We're using Google Slides and PowerPoint to do our desktop publishing, right? We 2 years ago, we started a yearbook for our in-building students because we didn't have a yearbook before, right? I work at an online school. We have in-building programs. We have a small group of our large student body that actually comes to school, and we put together a yearbook for our K-12 students that come to our school building, and we figured out how to do that. And I said, I can do this way faster than you guys could, but I'm going to have you walk on this journey with me because it's worth learning. It's the learning is important. And you know, if I tell you exactly how we're going to do this, that's not you figuring it out and problem solving. And so I'm going to be here. We're going to walk on this problem solving, critical thinking journey together, and we're going to come up with something at the end of the day.
How
Right
did
now,
that?
I'm work. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
So this year's project is how to do this podcasting thing, and I'm right, and how to do it okay, you know, pretty well. Not just turn on your microphone and record a little reflection about a thing, and we're going to call that a podcast. No. We're going to get some music. We're going to do graphics. We're going to do the thing. We're going to get onto, you know, Spotify podcaster platform and actually publish our stuff so that the world can hear our stuff, right? And I don't exactly know how it's going to go because they're like, well, we want to use the equipment. I'm like, to do what? What are you going to talk about? And they're like, I don't know, but we want to play with the equipment. I'm like, so what? It's just equipment. It's just tools, right? And unless you have something to say. So that's where we're at. And I'm learning, figuring out how to do kind of humanities storytelling, and I'm not that teacher with my students and having them figure out what they're going to talk about. So it's not easy. But it's exciting.
When you started off teaching,
Yeah.
did you have this idea to go the like the inquiry or project-based learning type route, or were you more of a traditional teacher?
I was more of a traditional teacher. When I started, I taught science 9 and 10, and when I moved to AVS after I was in a regular building for a year and a half, I acquired a whole bunch of paper-based curriculum. And then it wasn't until I stepped out of the classroom, out of that role at AVS, at the Abbotsford Virtual School, and went to the district level to be a helping teacher for technology, did I go, there's a whole lot more here than doing it the traditional way of doing it, right? I was a blended learning teacher in the sense that we have our content online and students would need help and I would help them out and, you know, answer messages and do all kinds of stuff. They'd come into my office and get support and all those kinds of things. So the whole blended learning thing wasn't there when I started, but it began about 8 months after, as you know, made a website. And I'm like, I'm going to put the shape of the day on here and I'm going to link my PowerPoint. And there's the worksheet that we did, and it's going to be on my website. And students are like, Mr. Carpenter, it's 3:30. Are you going to put that on your website? And I'm like, just give me a second, right? You know, like this isn't required. And it was a way that I could have kind of a record of what I talked about in class. And I found that students that, you know, were away sick or whatever would come to school with their work done. Why? Because they had a way to find out what we did, you know, which,
Nice.
you know, and so it began like that. The whole inquiry and how can we use technology to tell story came from my experience as a helping teacher. And when I came back to AVS after that, my boss, who is my the principal that I talked to back that one cold October night, he was my boss. He said, Brian, I got an opportunity. What do you think about this? Let's have some students into the building in grade 9 and 10, and you teach them whatever you want to teach them, and maybe even some science. And so I dug into the Science 10 content, and we learned about Adobe Express and about making videos and about technology and all these graphic things that I do today. And it was pretty rad because I didn't exactly know how it was going to go, but I'm like, I'm going to teach you some skills so that you can be a better digital citizen. Right. And now today we've got our in-building program, my media design classes from, you know, grade 6 to grade 12. You know, these kids are leaving with skills that I'm thankful that they've learned. Is it high-end Adobe, Photoshop, you know, is Illustrator? No way. No. It's none of that. It's all the free stuff like Canva, like Adobe Express. And things that, you know, my biggest thing is, can you move information around? You know, can you take a picture on your phone and then put it into your report on your computer? Like, do you know how to do that, right? Because if we can take the stuff that we do in our everyday and use that in our learning, then that makes a big difference.
What difference does it make on kids?
What difference does it make?
What have you noticed?
I've noticed that they can do things more than write a book report, right? They can make posters. Right? They can make videos. They help their sisters at home with their projects for grade 3. One of my students that's in grade 7 is like, Mr. Carpenter, she sent me an email. She actually emailed me, which was pretty cool, and said, I helped my little sister who's in Mrs. Griffith's class downstairs with her poster for her tree project. And she emailed it to me. And I went, that is just top drawer. Because it's about skills that we can use in our everyday, right? And I share with my students things that I do outside of school. I've got a YouTube channel, and I share with them, you know, videos that I've made when we go hiking on a weekend, or I go kayaking in the summer. And I don't go, look at Mr. Carpenter's life. I go, I create content. This is what I do. And I'm trying to be a model of how can I show you that you can create content all the time, take pictures all the time, use them in different places and things like that. So it's not straightforward. It's a mess, but we can do some pretty cool things.
I think it's so cool. And I think it's so cool that you're giving kids this opportunity to express themselves in something other than, say, a test, right?
Yep.
Because, I mean, I will give the odd test, but I have to admit, like, I've veered almost completely away from it because, you know, that inundating kids with content, memorize, test, repeat.
Yeah.
It's showing, you know, when they do well, it's showing that they're really good test takers.
Yep.
Right. And are they really absorbing that content? Right. And like for listeners who aren't familiar with the BC curriculum, we've shifted to a curricular competency based, right? A process or skill driven type curriculum where the content's still important, but, you know, we're using it. It's not a means to an end, right? It's the vehicle in order to now actually teach and assess the skills.
That's right.
You know, and I think this is how we get kids excited about it.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
These are 21st century skills. We're getting them excited about it. They don't need to know it's not high-end Adobe. Right. Like they're just excited because they get to play. One of my favorite things to do with kids is, because I have to admit, I'm not that tech savvy, you know, like, I mean, I'll use Canva and I'll do that. But I like to give kids the opportunity to represent their learning in some way. Like, you know, we'll do instead of a book report, which is an essay, I'll say, okay, I want you to represent your learning in some way. Okay, so we're looking on a theme. Okay, here, every group gets a different theme. You're unpacking it in this novel. Now I want you to represent it in some way. And then I want you to focus on either your strengths or learn something new. You've never made a digital comic book? Well, guess what? I'm instead of, you know, 5 blocks of class time, we've got 7. So you can actually spend 2 playing with some software on the computer to learn how. And I'm watching them play and I'm going, whoa, I didn't even know how to do that. Or kids who decide to, you know, create like 30 seconds of stop motion with Lego figurines expressing survival in Julie of the Wolves. And they're like, oh my God, it's only 30 seconds long. I'm like, are you kidding me? I know how labor intensive this was. I couldn't have done this.
That's
right. Write a play. And in fact, I'll even tell kids, you cannot write an essay. You cannot make a poster. Like, and I don't mean a digital poster, but I mean like a typical poster, or write a paragraph. I want you to do something creative to express yourself. And there's something about like what you're doing, what I'm doing, that when we get kids to critically and creatively think, that content becomes like tattooed on their soul. Like, this is how we get kids to have, to remember what we're trying to teach them.
Yep. Exactly.
So do you coach other teachers in your building on how to use this in different subject areas, or have you thought about doing that kind of thing?
I work with other teachers in our, you know, in my community to talk about that. I've done ProD at conferences and things like that. And as a helping teacher, that was my job, was to do ProD, and it carried on for a while. And you know, I model that in out in our community. You know, I'm part of the Middle School Teachers Association through the BCTF. And through that, you know, I work with other teachers in different capacities and model that and show that, you know, we can use these tools in different ways, right?
Mm-hmm. So when you think about, and I know you've already touched on this a little bit, maybe if there's some other anecdote you've got, when you think about where you started in education and how far you've come, what learnings have stuck or really reformed your practice in addition to, you know, inquiry? Is there anything assessment-wise you want to talk about?
Well,
you know assessment is right. Kind of my forte, Brian.
Exactly. The whole assessment thing. Being a scientist and being a math guy, it was like, there's an answer. There's one right answer. And, you know, back when I started, it was like, if you can get the right answer, does it really matter how you get there? And as time went on, it was like the process is so very important and how we get there. So much so now that I don't even care what the right answer is. If you don't understand the math or the science to get to the end of it, it mm-hmm. doesn't matter, right? Because I can call out and I can ask my Google assistant the answer, and I can get the answer pretty likely, right? In our world of artificial intelligence today, we can get answers very, mm-hmm. very quickly, right? But if we don't understand how we get there or how to critically think about what the answer is and how the process we got there is, then it doesn't really matter. And I don't think there's a whole lot of learning that's going on. If I can ask Google Assistant what the answers are, I listened to my daughters when they were in grade 3, talk to Google and get the math answers. Right. And I'm like,
I shouldn't laugh, but it is
no,
kind of funny, isn't it?
It's kind of funny. Right. And I'm like, but how do you know that that's the answer? Right. And they're like, well, because Google said so. And I said, well, do you know what Google said? Do you understand it? And, you know, it takes time to go backwards and go, yeah, that's how we get there. Right. In my online courses, we provide the students with their learning guides, the answer key. Right. I give them the answers. And like, it's like the answers in the back of the textbook. So they hand their work in. If they're not showing me the process, I don't care, because I've given you the answers, right? And they need to understand the process of being able to get the answers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, impressing on students' process and the fact that it takes hard work to learn stuff mm-hmm. and to be able to understand, you know, about creativity, the four C's, right? Creativity, communication, collaboration, how important it is to collaborate, and critical thinking. Those things are the 21st century skills that we are trying to impress on our students. And that's what the BC curriculum has turned into, impressing mm-hmm. these skills on students, right?
Mm-hmm.
But more than that now, I think that we can learn to do that, but reflection is so important. And it was actually last week, I listened to a podcast on the Optimalist podcast with Sarah Candela. She was talking with Michelle Ament about this whole idea of reflection. Now, we say we need to reflect. How do we do that? How do we look at that and do that, right? I reflect by listening to podcasts. I reflect by maybe writing things down, by looking at my lesson. Do I have a way of recording it or things like that? Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And your very first guest on your podcast, Trevor McKenzie, friend of mine, he broke down this inquiry mindset for us that has actually helped us. It scared me as a scientist when I heard about it, because I was like, You want me to take and crack open a science lab and throw students in there and say, go learn something? No way. That's dangerous. Someone's going to get killed, right? It's not good. It's not a good idea. But he said that there's the four different levels. There's a progression of.
Right. The swimming pool.
Absolutely. And
Right?
so, right. And so this is where the whole reflective thing is. And Michelle Ament and Sarah Kandela, they talked about, Sarah has the framework of the four Fs. And now, so we have our first one is the facts. What are the facts? The second one, how do you feel about that? The third one is what are your findings now that you've felt and looked at the facts? And then fourth is what are you going to do moving forward? What's the future, right? So we got facts, feelings, findings, and future. Blew my mind. And I'm like, finally, I got a framework that I can put around reflection. I do this every day. I've been doing this for years, but I'm like, I like the having a list, something I can fill boxes into. And I'm going to start teaching my students about that because I think that if we can get our students reflecting and expressing their feelings after something happens, like we build a newsletter and we're like, I'm like, how did you feel today? I want you to reflect right now. Can I do this at home? No, I don't want you to do it at home because your feelings will fade and you're not going to feel the same way tomorrow. Right. So I knew the whole feeling thing was important. Looking at the facts is important. But then what do you do with that? What are you going to do moving forward? And how? So I really like having kind of like these progression frameworks and mindsets about things. So, yeah.
Okay.
So
So,
that's where I'm at
you
now.
know, there you are, fresh airing at 5 already there, Brian. Well, I'm going to be like, I'm writing down the podcast. Like, as soon as I'm done recording here, I'm going to listen. How do we get kids who are, you know, I like how you talk about how like the process and the mistake making, and you know, my podcast is Embrace the Messy, as
Yes.
it values this idea of growth mindset. When we
Yes.
were still in this culture of, you know, point driven process, kids are like, you know, is this worth points? How do you shift them into being comfortable with the messiness and the mistake making that is that process?
I don't give them grades for a lot of stuff,
Yeah.
right? Like,
Yeah.
this is important. You know,
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
taking notes in my online course. That's important. Am I marking your notes? Nope. You're going to write a test
Yeah.
one day, and if you don't take your notes, it'll show
Yeah.
up,
Yep.
right? And
Yeah.
about impressing the point of learning and encouraging them to learn because that's where the value is in what we're doing.
Have kids come from the idea that everything is worth points. It takes a little time, right, to kind
Yeah,
of
yeah.
get over the hump. I think it was in Matt Townsley's book. There was the curve, right? Where, and this is what happens with teachers when they start removing points. They're like, oh, this is not going to work. They're just not going to do their homework. They're not going to take the notes. They're not going to do it. I'm like, well, it takes time to build that culture. We just can't give up. We
Right.
have to make sure that we have as much of a growth mindset and know that this is going to be messy as what we're trying to instill in kids. It can't be just about getting the right answer. It has to be about getting messy and making mistakes. You know, you mentioned Trevor McKenzie, and oh my God, I love that interview and his books.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Inquiry Hollow. Like, I just, oh my gosh,
Yeah.
I'm always thinking project-based learning, inquiry-based learning. And one of the things he encouraged educators to do is put up your values. And one of mine is growth mindset, right? Get messy and admit that and share that messiness with students. So I it's just so valuable, right? It's just trying to convince. It's and that's why I think, you know, it's so important that we talk about these kinds of things on podcasts and things like that so we can explain that, yeah, it is messy, but man, we see so much value. Like, hear us. We're so excited. Like, I'm listening to you. You've got so much energy and you're so excited. I'm so excited, right? You know, and that to give it a chance, give it a chance and get messy. What's next for you, Brian? What does the future hold for Brian's Fresh Air at 5 and teaching and what's going on with you? What's next?
The podcast, I will do my best to continue reflecting and sharing podcasts and bringing to light, you know, awesome educators and the things that they're doing. That allows me to grow my professional learning network so that, you know, I'm going to a conference in the spring. I'm going to Spring Q in California, and I'm excited to go, and I'm going by myself. And am I concerned about that? Nope. I'm going to run into some people that I know, you know, just because I know them through Twitter and through, you know, connecting with them, and it's going to be great. So I'm excited about
that. You're going to present or you're going to attend?
Attend.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm going to take all my Pro D money and I'm going to a conference, which I'm super excited about. So it's a me time. So another thing that I'm working on is learning about the generative age and about artificial intelligence. And so artificial intelligence is in our face today, and it is not going away. And it is the new technology that will disrupt the things that we are doing. You know, as an English teacher, I bet you're concerned about student writing, about student creativity, about, you know, how can we create content and make sure that it's actually the student's work. You know, I am excited about it. I'm actually teaching my middle school students through Common Sense Media's curriculum about artificial intelligence, right? And I'm stepping into that because it is something, it's a part of our digital citizenship learning that students need to be understanding that it's all around us. And just because November 30th last year, ChatGPT came online, we've had artificial intelligence around us for years and years and years. And, you know, now that it's very much more public, you know, what do we do with that? How do we ethically use it, right? I can't stop you from having it write your English assignment. I can't. But you got to sleep with yourself at night and know that you didn't do that, or you know, use it as a starting point to get some ideas. And you wrote it yourself, right? You know? So it's that's what's next for me. I'm pretty excited about it. And I'm listening to more podcasts now about artificial intelligence, the generative age, and others. And
nice. I can't wait to hear in the future about how that goes. I know, I think when I first heard about AI and ChatGPT, I was like, oh, panic as an English teacher. And now I don't think there's a day goes by that I'm not using it. I'm using it with assessment, right? Because, you know, on Beyond Report Cards, someone, you know, mentioned something about some kind of a proficiency scale. And I, you know, I've learned how to, you know, feed what I need to feed into it, and supporting even the teachers as the assessment lead in my school to build proficiency skills as a starting off point. And, you know, as an English teacher, it worries me, but at the same time, I like the fact that we've also got, again, this wonderful opportunity, even though it's an English curriculum, to think about what kinds of writing assignments can I give that they can't ChatGPT it? Like, how can we make it personal? You know, I won't go too long-winded into this, but it's even like connecting with a character and saying, what are your values? What is a character's values? How are you the same and how are you different?
And ChatGPT doesn't really know the answer.
It's you know, or you know, getting them to do some writing and making sure all that process is in class. Guess what? I'm getting products that are way better than assigning something to do at home. Right? Because we used to worry that a caregiver or a sibling was helping them anyways. I need to see it in action. So fewer assignments and that kind of thing. But I love it. Like I said, I'm using it. It's a time saver, man. Like I'm loving it. Okay. Yep. So wrap up with elevator pitch, Brian. You ready?
I think so. Okay. You asked me this question. I knew it was coming because I listened to your podcast. And I've taken some time, and I think I have my elevator pitch.
Okay.
Are you timing me?
No, I'm not timing you. I'm like any other podcaster that it's like, you know, like you hear that all the time, like when you listen to podcasts. Right. Okay, lightning round, and then someone goes on and on and on. Exactly. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to just embrace the messy.
There you go.
And deal with whatever comes around. Okay, so you are on floor number three. Educator gets on They press six. You got three floors
Yep.
between when they get on, you're going up to the sixth floor, and they're like, trying to think about whether or not they should actually, start a podcast, start something new, embrace the messiness of that. What little tidbits, what nuggets can you give them to convince them to embrace the messiness of all that is podcasting?
All right, I would start off with reflection is the key to learning. Working out a way for you to reflect and record your learning is important so you can grow and look back on your path and see the places where you've grown. You don't need to be perfect in all these things, but need to stay focused on being a little better tomorrow than you were today. Share your learning with others as we are part of a fantastic community of people and we can share our learning. So start a podcast, write a book, write a blog, or whatever. Just keep reflecting and growing.
Be your authentic self, right?
There you go. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Right?
It's
It's because
admit that
it's,
it's hard.
yeah, it's, and it's because it's so easy when you are listening to a lot of podcasts. I found myself going, oh, I'm just going to take a little slice of that one and a little slice of that one, a little slice of that one, a little slice of that one, and then still try to make it my own, right?
That's
And
right.
not try to do anything that's cookie cutter, right?
All right.
And take the feedback. Right. Take the feedback, right? You get feedback about everything from music to volume to, how
That's
many
right.
times someone says, and you just have to roll with it. Well,
Exactly.
Brian, I've learned so much from you in this short time together. It was such a pleasure talking to you. I think you represent the kind of teacher that has, courage and takes risks and has a growth mindset. And again, I'm so grateful that you're helping me amplify my voice, but at the same time, like I said, I see you as this individual who has so much to offer the world, and I am grateful to now call you my friend. So thank you so
Absolutely.
much. Thank
Well,
you so
thank you.
much for coming.
You're welcome, Shannon. It was a pleasure to be here, and I really appreciate our conversation.
I'm honored to have produced this and all episodes of the Embrace the Messy podcast with Shannon Schinkel on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Tsleil-Waututh'en First Nation. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and share it with a colleague or friend. Doing so will help others find the podcast. Know someone who embraces the messy and would make a great guest on the pod? Email me at embracethemessypodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time. Thank you.